All right, 99.5 KKLA FM Los Angeles, the intersection of faith and reason here at the Frank Pastore Show. Welcome aboard. Yeah, I know. We'll get to it. The Anthony Weiner thing, Congress, I know. We'll get to it. Trust me. 5 o'clock, we're talking about that. Before we get to that, though, I want to pose a question to you. Can you imagine dating, I don't know, Chuck Smith's daughter or John MacArthur's daughter or Greg Laurie's daughter? You know what I mean? A big Christian leader's daughter. And can you imagine the dating thing? And then can you imagine what kind of father-in-law they would be? Well, I want you to meet Bill Heatley. Now, that doesn't ring a bell for most of you. Bill Heatley is married to Dallas Willard's daughter, Becky, okay? And Bill Heatley obviously is an expert on his father-in-law stuff, but he also has written a book on dealing with the gift of work. And I thought it'd be fun to have Bill on the show because, as you guys know, Dallas is my Gandalf, okay? I have learned more about the Christian life from Dallas Willard than almost anybody else except for maybe my local pastor. And he's had a huge, profound impact on me. In fact, if you're just listening and you're grabbing this on the podcast, and I don't know, you're in Antarctica, the most impactful book I have ever read for my spiritual life, other than the Bible, is a book entitled The Divine Conspiracy by Dallas Willard. Dallas is a prof over at USC. He is, in my age group, the E.F. Hutton commercials, you know, when we talk, people listen. When Dallas talks, people listen. Even if you get senior pastors and theologians together and things like that, he's extremely profound. Anyway, but he's so normal, too. And he's had a huge impact on my life. I encourage you, go get The Divine Conspiracy. It will change your life. It certainly has mine. So, Bill Heatley, welcome to the Frank Pastore Show. Bro, how you doing, man?
Frank, it's great. I'm doing well.
I want dirt on Dallas. You know what I mean? It's like I have them up here on this pedestal, but he's also so very unassuming, you know?
He's a wonderful man.
So what is he like in the kitchen? You know what I mean?
Well, don't let him in there, I think, is really kind
of... Oh, really?
Yeah, I think one of the best stories is it was time for me to talk to the parents because it was time to, you know, ask for Becky's hand in marriage.
Oh, wow.
Breakfast meeting, Dallas decided to make waffles, and I think it was a test for me to see if I would, like, swallow what he had made. So it was...
They're bad? How could you blow it for waffles?
They were just the worst waffles.
You do the Bisquick or the Aunt Jemima and the butter and syrup and come on.
There were a couple of ingredients that might have been missing or added. So, but everything works together for good, apparently. So
See, this is great. Because MacArthur likes to do Mexican food. Dobson likes to do chili, and now Willard is really bad on waffles.
Yeah, don't do the waffle thing.
You almost got ahead of yourself. Can you go back?
Sure,
I want to know, you know, did you know who Dallas was when you were familiar, when you met Becky and stuff? I mean, take me back. When did you meet your wife kind of thing? How'd that start?
We were working together. She had started, and she was just gorgeous, absolutely gorgeous. Loved her right away, beautiful. But Dallas was just Becky's dad. And that was it. I had no idea. I was just really beginning my walk of faith at the time. So the fact that he was a professor at USC was the biggest thing. And it wasn't until a little bit later that I learned who Dallas is.
All right. So you were working. You're an IT guy, right?
I'm an IT guy.
Okay. So you corporate job. You're doing the IT thing. Here's a cute girl you're working with. Hey, you want to go out? And my father's name is Dallas, and he's a prof at USC. That's all you knew.
That's it.
I love that. All right. So when did you start having the aha kind of thing? When was the first time you, quote, meet the parents?
Well, I met them. Gosh, I'm trying to remember. They were coming back. We were over at the house. We met them. They seemed really genuinely sweet. I think the first realization that Dallas is who Dallas is was he had me proofread The Divine Conspiracy.
Really?
Yeah.
So
My Christian walk started with a full read through the Bible and then a read through The Divine Conspiracy.
No way. You're a brand new Christian or just...
Well, I mean, that's kind of a while ago, but yeah. Yeah, I mean, my real first serious Christian experience was molded and shaped by a read through the Bible with Dallas's direction. And then my first Christian book was The Divine Conspiracy.
No way.
Shaped me, molded me, formed me. I am what I am.
Okay, so all the stuff that I said, you have that same report. See, everybody has that report once they read The Divine Conspiracy.
Yeah, it was mind-boggling, mind-blowing, mind-opening. It was just an amazing, amazing book.
All right, so was he real? I can't imagine how Dallas would be with you when you're dating his daughter and then, you know, the hand in marriage thing and the waffle, but... What was he like?
Well, you know, what's fascinating to me is you'll be at the family dinner table and, you know, Dallas will be in the middle of the semester and a student will call and he will leave and speak with him for an hour.
Really?
So he makes himself available to the students. And when he says that he loves his students and prays for them,
yeah.
He loves his students and prays for them. And it's amazing to watch that. It's amazing to watch that kind of love come into a life and come into a job. And it was really an inspiration for me to see that. It's really what kind of inspired me to write the book.
Now, Bill, I want people to know your wife Becky's here along with your 12-year-old daughter Larissa,
yes.
And so
yes.
They're not on mic; they're just sort of watching. But so you got married how long ago?
We just celebrated our 14th wedding anniversary.
Okay. All right, so you're still kids. We're at 30,
yeah.
So
yeah,
14 years. Okay, that's great. Now I want to know, how do you go from IT corporate guy marrying Becky, and then your first book is Divine Conspiracy that you read, and now you're big time involved in this theology of work project and doing,
right.
quote, your own stuff.
Right.
Take me from the beginnings to where we got to today.
Well, first of all, you need to blow up your life. So I blew up my life, and, you know, bankruptcy, divorce, repossession, the whole nine yards, come to the end of your rope, find God, decide to follow Jesus. God grants you this great grace and mercy by bringing Becky into your life.
Oh.
And so, you know, I was in a very moldable place in my life, and Becky and Dallas were instrumental in forming me and shaping me and leading me to Christ. And although I'd been born and raised a Roman Catholic,
right.
The only thing I was left with was that, A, I didn't know how to run my own life, and B, I should follow Christ.
Mm.
And then the next people that come into your life is Dallas and Becky. So
wow.
Can you imagine?
Yeah.
So it one of the things that I struggled with, and I blew up my life because I was a workaholic, and so I really had difficulties at work. I mean, that was a major challenge. I defined myself by what I made for a living.
Yes.
My title, my power, my authority, everything I was to my children, to my friends, to my family, to my society, was derived from work. It owned me.
Yeah, I mean, typically whenever you meet a guy, you know, I mean, like guys at the gym. I just did this today where I work out. And
sure.
I met a new guy, and we were both there doing the bench press thing. And I said, I think his name was Steve. Steve, tell me about yourself. First thing, what he did for a living.
Right. That's how we define ourselves.
As males, especially in our culture, yeah. It's, you know, like I often say, we define ourselves in this culture in a non-Christian worldview by what you do, how much you make, where you live, who
right.
you sleep with, what you drive. I mean, all those kind of external things. And yet, it's the internal thing that really, really counts. Bill, when we come back, I want you to talk about the Theology of Work Project in your book, The Gift of Work. Because
yeah.
a lot of guys, especially, and with Father's Day coming up, I'm thinking your book, The Gift of Work, is just really key. Because a lot of guys, like you, pour themselves into their careers in their 20s and 30s, then there's that wake-up call, or you blow up your life, like you just said.
Yeah.
And let's try to avoid doing that, and we'll talk about that straight ahead. Quick
Fantastic.
Break, we'll continue with Bill Heatley. He specializes in teaching on discipleship in the workplace, and we're going to do that straight ahead, and that's upcoming here on the Frank Pastore Show at 99.5 KKLA. And it'd be a great gift. I mean, I wish I had heard, you know, gotten something like that back, I don't know, when I was like 23 in the big leagues, you know. Welcome back to the Frank Pastore Show. My guest is Bill Heatley, and Bill specializes on what's called the theology of work, you know what I mean, or the gift of work. And he is married to Dallas Willard's daughter, Becky, and they have a wonderful, beautiful daughter, Larissa, who's sitting about 3 feet from me.
Yeah.
And but, Bill, we had mentioned a moment ago
mm-hmm.
about viewing work as your ministry. And I want to get into that, but guys so often blow it by pouring their entire identity into what they do for a living. And there's a lot of guys listening right now, and there's a lot of wives and girlfriends listening right now, and their significant other is totally sucked up into this. So how do we talk to the 25-year-old or the 28-year-old who's just now starting, say, in the corporate world? How do you get your priorities right so you don't fall into that trap of just, you know, running on the treadmill?
Well, the big thing is identity and power. I mean, who are you and where do you derive your power from? Who are you hanging out with? What's important to you? What do you define success as? And success is the big driver. So whatever you define success as, that is going to lead your life. And if you define it as being, hey, climbing the corporate ladder, making a ton of money, driving the fast car, whatever that is, you will make sacrifices to achieve that. And those sacrifices turn out to be compromises, and those compromises ruin your life. And they lead you astray. And especially in these economic times, a lot of the ministry that I'm doing right now is for people that are unemployed, underemployed, misemployed, overemployed, or retired. These are people that want to know, am I more than my job? So that's what their major challenge is. And, you know, originally the book was called, the working title was Work, What Was God Thinking? Because that was one of the major challenges. The big question that I had was, is work simply about making money and beating out the other guy? And I, for many years, thought that's what it was all about.
Because that's what you did.
That's what I did, and I was really good at it.
I
was amazingly good at it, and I stooped to almost anything to achieve my goal and my aim.
Now flip it over to athletics. I mean, my thing was, if you didn't beat the other guy, you were out of a job.
Right.
And
exactly.
So it's totally built into it. Bill, one of the things I stumbled on years ago, I was doing a men's conference, golly, I can't remember, I want to say out in Palm Springs, but... and a guy asked a question, and the answer that came out as we were talking was, he was that 28-year-old that I was talking about a minute ago.
Right.
And he was basically saying, okay, prep me so I don't fall into the trap. Because right now, everything, every dynamic, I'm married, every dynamic I'm getting is, I've got to just pour myself into my job to be successful. And so I stumbled across this, and I want to get your feedback. I said, okay, let's say his name's Tom. And I said, okay, so Tom, now wait a minute. If you had 2 or 3 days off and you could do anything that you wanted to do, what would you do? And he'd say, well, I'd we'd get, you know, the 2 or 3 couples that we're closest with, and we'd go out to the river, we'd go to Laughlin, we'd go boating, because we're into jet skis and their hot boats and all that kind of stuff. And I said, okay, great. So that's really important to you, right? In fact, would you say that you work in order to do that? Yeah. I said, okay, stop. You've already acknowledged that relationships are more important than your career. That you're doing your career in order to have those relationships. He didn't have any kids yet.
Right.
And I said, okay, that value system is intact, and that's solid. That's what you want. But, Bill, so many guys blow it, and we lose that perspective.
Well, the biggest thing is, why did God create work? What is it here for? What does it do? What purpose does it serve? And that's one of the biggest questions that you have to answer, is why did God create work? What's its purpose?
Are we going to work in heaven?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, well, lay that out, because I know your father-in-law, you know, Dallas Wheeler, talks about laboring and not sweating and work and all those kind of things. Spill that out, because, folks, look, let me just tell you something. If you've not heard this before, this is one of those aha moments. You know, the most common word in heaven?
Oh.
Oh. Okay, and so you're gonna have one of those. Lay this out, Bill, because it's great stuff.
Goes all the way back to the beginning. In the garden, God took Adam and placed him in the garden and said, work it and care for it. That is the Hebrew word abad and shamar. That is labor and care. That is work and care. That means invest yourself. The other one is the dominion mandate. Take responsibility for creation. It's God's good earth that he's created for your blessing, for your benefit. Do something good with it. When the fall occurred, a lot of people misunderstand that that means that all of work is now fallen and evil. But that fall did not take away either the work mandate as being something that you do under the provision of God and as a caring function, nor did it eliminate the dominion mandate to care for God's creation. So now you roll that tape forward, and you come into the new heaven and the new earth, and you find people doing amazing things with God's creation. We are now employed in the creative enterprise of God in his kingdom, in this world, without the fallen nature of sin. We can do what? I mean, your imagination gets to run wild. Do you make new colors, new music? Do you make new structures? I mean, what kind of weaving do you do with light? There's just an amazing number of things. One of the biggest questions you got to start with is, when God put Adam and Eve in the garden and told them to work it and care for it, the next verse doesn't say, and he gave them a tractor to do it with. So the big question we have to answer is, how did they do that work? And we have to answer that question by saying, with God.
I think it's really helpful for people to imagine, okay, what life's going to be like on the other side of the veil, right? And so there's no unemployment line. You are going to have responsibilities. You are going to have to work. I'm sure there's going to be times in which you may not want to do specifically what's in front of you. Okay, that's just part of having free will in a structured social environment. But there's no sweat involved. I want you to explain that, because that was the curse, having the sweat and
the
labor, but not the work thing. Explain those distinctions.
Well, one of the things that was taken away was Adam and Eve worked in the power of God. They named the animals, right? We know that they named the animals. name is such a powerful word in the Bible. It imbues a characteristic for those animals. When Jesus talks about, you know, if you have just a mustard seed of faith, what happens to the mountain? What happens to the mustard? What happens to the tree? So is he alluding back to what it was like to work with God? And is he forecasting and prophesying what it's going to be like in the new heavens and the earth to work with God, to work in the power of God? And that's what we see displayed in the New Testament is people working in the power of God to effect good change.
The way that Jesus gardened with the fig tree.
Yeah.
You know, just, okay, withered, you know, and just boom, bear no more fruit. So the distinction is that, yes, we will work in heaven, which means accomplish good things and pour effort into things. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the big things for me when I look back, I'm 54 now, when I look back is the sense of accomplishment after a job well done through something that I poured a lot of work into. Obviously, children, marriage, job, career, radio. Yeah, but even silly things like I used to make model ships during the off seasons.
Oh, well, this is even better.
Take out, you know what I mean? And
yeah.
So, but that wonderful sense of, look at that. You know, it's a job well done. We're going to still have opportunities to do that on the other side.
Absolutely. But let's talk about right now, though. You know, so one of the best stories I've got is we're packing the lunch for Larissa. And I decided to go to school to see her interacting with her classmates in kindergarten. School bell rings. She goes out. There's the bag. There's the peanut butter and jelly sandwich. And I remember that she had prayed the Lord's Prayer the night before. Give us this day our daily bread. And it struck me. It struck me like an epiphany that at the time that she was praying that, there were farmers in the field reaping wheat. There were bakers in the bakery baking that bread. There were people who were driving it to the store, stocking it on the shelves, checking it out, making the refrigerators, that there were so many people doing their job were answering the prayer of a little girl. Mm. We do not think of that. We do not think how many prayers we answer by doing our work well. So doing your work well is a way that God has crafted for us to answer prayers. Work done well answers prayers. There isn't anything more fulfilling than to meet the needs, the prayerful needs for peace and security, safety, food, provision, clothing, entertainment, righteousness, all of those things that we want. We pray for them. Guess how God answers those prayers? Through you and me doing our job.
But Bill, listen, we got to take a break. But I'm thinking if I were hearing this as a non-believer, a non-Christian, or maybe a baby Christian, it's like, dude, what are you talking about? She's a waitress, or he's a cook, or, you know, I'm in sales. You know, I don't have the perspective of my job, my work, as fitting in this category that you're talking about. So when we come back, let's talk about some of the problem areas to help people understand, look, whatever you're doing, likely, I don't know, unless you're in porn or something, but or a drug pusher, most likely what you're doing can fit into this category.
Mm-hmm.
We'll do that straight ahead as we continue with Bill Heatley. The book is entitled The Gift of Work, Spiritual Disciplines for the Workplace, a great Father's Day gift. You can get it at Amazon.com or at BillHeatley.com. And, of course, a lot of you guys are driving. I'll link to that at KKLA.com. Quick break. We'll continue on the theology of work and the gift of work straight ahead with Bill Heatley here on the Frank Pastore Show at 99.5 KKLA. See, that is a perfect example of what I'm talking about. Welcome back to the Frank Pastore Show. My guest is Bill Heatley, and he is a specialist on discipleship in the workplace. Okay, a better phrasing might be a theology of work. Or how about just viewing your work as a ministry? And a lot of you are in jobs where you don't have that at all. I'll give you a perfect example. Several years ago on the show, we were talking about this very issue. It may have even been, Bill, when you were on.
Could have been.
And we had, get this now, and I'm not going to embarrass her because we got emails and we exchanged, but she was a cocktail waitress for the Hustler Casino down in wherever it is. And she called in response to what we're talking about and basically said, I feed alcoholics drinks all day. Then they dump their house payment. And I see the same group every day, you know, over and over again. I want to leave. I want to move. But I've got two kids. Grandma, my mom's watching them. Husband ran out. And so if I don't do this, we don't eat. I'm stuck. Help. And, Bill, I see you nodding.
Yeah.
Because a lot of single moms are in that category doing things where, you know, I wish I could be with my kids, or I wish I could be another career, and they feel stuck. But there's some careers that are clearly immoral. I mean, like porn, drug dealer, et cetera. You can't, you know, drug dealers for Jesus ain't going to fly.
No, it's a tough thing. And people are going to find themselves in a job, and it's to feed themselves. And it's just to make the basics of life. And they enter into their faith. They find out, you know, hey, there's something else out there. And do they have the courage to step out of a job that doesn't have any creative, redemptive value? It doesn't add any value into society or into the people that they're serving. They've got to be able to step away from it. That's what church is for. One of the biggest things that I find is that people need to be more invested in the ministries in their life. If their entire life is defined by their job, they don't have a ministry, then they don't have an opportunity to learn the joy of working with other people. I work with a lot of people that are unemployed. Their biggest question is, what should I do? How do I get a job? And I said, this season is for you to explore what ministry opportunities bring you joy. And I have yet to find a person who has invested themselves joyfully in their ministry who, out of that joy, doesn't find a job, doesn't find employment.
Really?
Absolutely. And you want to know why? Because what is an employer looking for? They're looking for somebody that's excited, passionate, joyful. They're looking for somebody who connects with other people, who's investing themselves in making this world a better place. Those are the kinds of employees that people hire. If you're just downtrodden, feel like you're beat up, and feel like this is the only job I can get because I have no value, well, guess what kind of job you're going to get? So invest more of yourself in your ministry as the biggest tool for entering into, A, knowing what your joy is, learning how to work with people, and getting a new job, whether you've got one or not.
All right, now stop right there. Like five times in the last 2 minutes, you said the word joy.
Yeah, joy is what it's all about.
Okay, lay that out, because there's men and women listening right now in the car or on the podcast, and they don't have joy at work at all, and maybe they're new believers, maybe there are, you know, mature believers. They don't have that joy at work, and they can't relate to what you're saying, Bill.
Well, that's going to come from two places. One is they're not going to have a big enough vision for what work does and how it fits into God's economy and how the work that we are doing meets those prayers and helps people to live their lives and blesses them. I talked to a guy at a men's conference, and he was really struggling with, he had been an air traffic controller for 30 years. And I asked him, I said, how many prayers did you answer by landing those planes safely? Right? I mean, you got the Christian prayer. You know, you pray for the travel mercies, right? Everybody does. I said, how many prayers did you answer over 30 years? How many planes? How many passengers? And you, by doing your job, along with everybody else that's involved in that industry, you helped answer those prayers. So that's part one, to see your job in God's economy for his way of answering prayers. The other part is, God made you to do something. God made you to have value, to have purpose, to do things that align with your giftedness. So there are things that you will naturally be inclined to do because you've got that aptitude, skill, personality, and giftedness. And you would do them whether you were getting paid or not.
Right, and many times you are. I mean, yeah. One of the things I can remember, here's a perfect example, and this is about my daughter Christina, who is now a very successful hairdresser in Irvine, at Newport Beach, actually. And Christina, when she was younger, extremely social. She was the center of the peer groups. All the girlfriends came over. She was the girl that did all the prom hair, you know, and all the dance hair and stuff when she was 14, 15, 16, right? And so we had a conversation later on in high school, and it was like, well, Dad, you know, what do you see me doing? And I said, sweetheart, and this is my advice for everybody listening. Okay, what are you already doing that if you can pull back and just sort of watch, how social are you? How relationships? Do you work, you know, with others, or are you better by yourself? Do you like to make stuff? Are you really organized? And you go down your giftedness. And then, second point, and this bounces off what you said, Bill, regarding the joy. What brings you joy?
Oh, yeah.
What gets you up at 6:30 on a Saturday morning?
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Friend of mine, he's a service manager for a car dealership, and he does not enjoy the job. He does not have joy in it. He's great at it, does a fantastic job. I pulled him in to do Vacation Bible School. He loved it. He loved doing the kids. He said, I have always wanted to work with kids and to coach them and to teach them sports. And you saw his face and you go, you should be doing this.
Yeah.
This is how God made you. And you can't tell me that you can't make a living out of doing that. I mean, where we live, I mean, all of the population just driving their kids around all these sporting events, that's definitely something that he could enter into. But, yeah, we can't feel guilty if the things that we do bring us joy. It's almost like we've got, as Christians, this weird thing that, well, if I enjoy it, it must not be good. It must not be right. You know, Satan must be involved in it because, you know, being a Christian's got to be a bummer, doesn't it? And it's not. Being a Christian is one of the most joyful experiences that we can have, and that works for our job as well.
All right, so it begins with viewing your work in God's economy.
Mm-hmm.
I get that. Secondly, it's understanding the joy aspect. That's often how God moves you from one place to another.
Oh, yeah.
Is the loss of joy. I mean, you may start at something that brings you a ton of joy, but it's not a life sentence. You're not going to be there until you're 70. And so maybe God moves you along. In fact, Bill, I read somewhere that the typical male, when they retire, have had, what is it, 5 careers?
At least.
Yeah.
Okay. At
so,
least, depending.
So how does God move you from one place to another? There's a lot of people listening right now who, you know, I wish God would move me kind of thing.
Well, right now, I would have to say one of the big areas where people are getting moved isn't the right one. It's this interesting concept that, well, I'm not in the right job, and if I had the right job, then I'd be happy, then I'd have joy, and I'd be in the bullseye of God's blessing. You know, I think every pastor I've talked to on this subject has had an umpteen number of people in their congregation come up and going, I just don't feel like I'm in the right job. And if I had the right job, well, that'd be great, and shouldn't I be a missionary? Or shouldn't I be a pastor? Or shouldn't I be in full-time ministry? And so they're looking someplace else except for inside the giftedness and the way that God has created them. And as you pointed out, the stuff that they naturally are inclined to involve themselves in as being the way that they inform themselves. Great website, Bill Hendricks. He's one of the guys who's on the Theology of Work board. It's the Giftedness Center. And he takes people through a course of study and practice and questions that helps guide them into knowing, how did God make them? What's their giftedness? What would they be best at? And what would they be most joyful doing?
Ah. See, excellent. And there are so many young people who really, really need to hear this. The Giftedness Center, is that the website?
Yeah,
giftedness.com?
Yeah.
Okay. The second aspect on this is, in the same way that we complete the sentence, I'd be really happy if I had that job or that career, or we lived over there, again, at external. We do the same thing in relationships.
Oh, absolutely.
It's always that person, that's Mr. Right or Mrs. Right, and I just happen to fall out of love with them.
Right.
And we externalize, and it's all internal. And so my advice, and I mean, you're the guy, but my advice to someone is, no, grow where you're planted. Right now,
yeah.
You know, how this is your ministry that God has you right now. Maybe there's something that he wants you to learn through this set of, you know, scenarios, this situation, in order to equip you for the next thing. You know what I mean?
You've got to come to a place where you understand that no matter where you are, no matter what your circumstances are in life, that is where Jesus is going to meet you. You know, the biggest learning that you need to learn from the Beatitudes, you know, blessed are the poor in spirit, blessed are those who mourn, blessed are those who are hungry, are not that they are somehow virtuous to be poor in spirit. It is that no matter what your life circumstances are, if your life is in the kingdom of God, that is where you will find the blessing. It's like telling somebody, when you go outside in the rain, you're going to get wet. Well, if you're in the kingdom, you're going to get blessed. And if you start there, then you start from a place of abundance and God's power, and then you can make the hard decisions to say, yeah, you know what, I am going to step away from this career because it just doesn't do anything for me. It doesn't help me become the kind of person that God wants me to be, and I could be a much bigger blessing to myself, to my family, to my friends, to my church, to my culture, if I enter into something that just gets me excited and awake every single morning and just wanting to do it. And all of a sudden, your life becomes this amazing light that burns incredibly bright because you're joyful.
Yep.
And because you went with the way that God made you to be joyful. But you've got to start where you are. That's the only place God can meet you. Classic Dallasism, right? A Willardian philosophy. God can only meet you where you are.
Mm. Bill, listen, we got to take a break. When we come back, I want to know some of the success stories you're familiar with.
Sure.
Where men and women have sort of heard this, applied it in their lives, made a change, and now they are experiencing that joy that we're talking about and that God intends for us to have on this side of the veil as we live out of the power of the kingdom.
Fantastic.
Quick break. We'll continue with Bill Heatley, who specializes on the discipleship in the workplace. His book is entitled The Gift of Work, Spiritual Disciplines for the Workplace, and it's really understanding, okay, I am right where I need to be, and God has me exactly where he wants me to be right now. And then there are lessons and things I need to learn in this situation that will equip me for my next task. And heaven is not going to be a place where you don't work. There's going to be lots of opportunities to apply our skills in ways we can't even imagine. But we prepare for that on this side of the veil. Quick break. We'll continue with Bill straight ahead here at the intersection of faith and reason at 99.5 KKLA. Now, see, that's a perfect example. That's a great bumper. All right. If you don't have joy at your work, then you aren't living out of the kingdom. All right, now, I don't want to sound silly, and I'll explain all this, but everybody have fun tonight, right? A lot of people view their job as merely just a job. Remember the old phrase, you know, you don't want just a job, you want a career, right? And God's intent for you is that you would have joy at whatever you're doing. Now, the way that happens, though, is he moves you from place to place, often by a lack of joy that you develop over time, and that's totally understandable. Talk to the men and women with gray or no hair that have been around the block a little bit, and that's how he moves you from one place to another. And isn't it interesting how the lessons that you learn at A apply in B, and then at B they learn apply in C kind of thing? Bill Heatley works in this whole area. He helps men and women and young people understand what's called the theology of work or the discipleship in the workplace. His book is entitled The Gift of Work. And Bill, share a couple stories of men and women who get this. They apply it in their lives, and it brings about a change.
Yeah, talk about a guy, really excellent career in the movie industry and television, and very dissatisfied. Didn't like the industry, didn't like what was going on, didn't like, you know, the FaceTime, and decided to shift into doing emergency medical tech. So, huge shift. And he did that shift because that's what brought him joy. And helping people who had, you know, been crashed up onto the street was a far more enjoyable activity for him because he felt like he was making a positive contribution. Another guy went the opposite way, working in the industry of helping kids with drug problems. And not that it wasn't rewarding, not that he wasn't helping them or anything like that, but he was having this talk with his daughter, and he's going, you know what you need to do? You need to follow your joy. You need to do what brings you joy. And all of a sudden, she looked at him and said, so do you, Dad.
Yeah, you the man.
Do you, Dad.
Nathan, yeah.
And so he put a big pause on his career and has shifted back into doing acting because it's what he always loved.
Ah, see.
Right? And another guy, he's working corporate America, making millions of dollars, completely dissatisfied. What does he have at home in his garage? Right? Nothing but woodworking equipment. Uh-huh. It's all he loved to do. So what does he decide to do? Shift into doing that full time, making cabinets.
Now, Bill, a lot of people, though, say, okay, that's when I retire.
Right. The
I'm
going to
do that when I retire. You know what I mean? But I think, God, if we could talk to the Lord on this, give me your wisdom on this. If you could, you know, saddle up to Jesus on this and mm-hmm. talk about your work, what advice would he say to us that you know, regarding our job, our career, our work?
Well, the easy yoke, look for joy, be with me, right? It's going to be very, very simple. You're going to sit next to him, and he's going to say something to you like, spread my word, as he did to me. And I'm going to look at that and go, what does that mean? And I had to put that into the context of my life, which meant I needed to understand work and where that has led me. What's amazing is this journey that you get on with the Lord as you follow his direction, take his guidance, learn from him. I can't tell you how much of my book came from gifts from God, because I said, God, I have no idea what to write here. You got to have something show up, and there'd be this knock on the door, and I'd be getting something from somebody, or I'd find something on my desk or some article. And all of a sudden, all of my questions, all of my needs are answered. So the book leads me to step one. Doing the book tour leads me to step two. Now I'm teaching. Now I'm on your radio show. Now I'm doing spiritual formation. And all of a sudden, I've got another book in the pipeline on spiritual formation. And if anybody who knew me in high school heard that I was doing this, they think it was just insane,
yeah,
absolutely crazy.
Which is why it's a God thing.
And, oh, it's
and
a total God
gets the glory.
Thing.
Yeah. Okay, so I'm going to ask you to do like three things here. Number one. Talk to the graduating high school senior right now about work and career.
What you have to do is take some time to be with God and understand, take a look at all of the loving structures that you have in your life, the loving structure of His creation, the loving structure of time, of family, of friends, of enjoyment, and understand that work is also a loving structure. It is something that you need to enter into, and it's about relationship. See, God created work for the purpose of bringing people together in loving community for mutual benefit and support. It's a place where you get to do exciting things with your talents and skills and abilities, and in doing it, you bless others. You answer their prayers, and in doing that, you are blessed in return.
Now, see, I guarantee right now all they see is a job. It's a paycheck.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
They totally drop it. And the reason I asked the high school one is because they think the stepping stone to, quote, the job is college.
Hey, here's a big question for them. And I've done this with high school students. Who do you think is successful? And you get the Bill Gates answer right away. Then you ask them, who do you think is good? And you get some other answer. Then you ask them, okay, so why are your answers different? Because as long as success and goodness are different, the world is going to tear you apart and lead you down this path of success. And your life is not going to be what you want it to be or what God intends.
Oh, I wish every college graduate would get this, or someone that's in the middle of a career transition. So I think the huge takeaway, Bill, is around the concept of joy and understanding it. That grow where you're planted. If you don't have joy in the field that you're working right now, maybe God is moving you elsewhere. The answer isn't, oh, I'd have joy if I was working in another field. No, it might be some of the internal stuff that you've got to address first. The book is entitled The Gift of Work, Spiritual Disciplines for the Workplace, and Bill Heatley is my guest. He a wonderful story about he and his wife, Becky, and Becky's father, who happens to be Dallas Willard, and, of course, the huge influence that Dallas has had on Bill, Becky, and their daughter, Larissa. Quick break. We'll continue straight ahead here at the intersection of faith and reason. The book is available at Amazon. It's entitled The Gift of Work. I'll also link to it over at KQLA.com.